2 Kings chapter 4. And it fell on the day that Elisha passed through Shunem, where there was a great woman. Appreciate that explanation, description of her. A great woman. And she constrained him to eat bread. I like that part for the preacher. And so it was that as oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. She said unto her husband, "Behold, now I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed, and a table, and a stool, and a candlestick." And he said unto him, "Say now unto her, Behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is to be done for thee? What can we do to repay your favor? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host?" And she answered, "I dwell among mine own people." And he said, "What then is to be done for her?" Gehazi answered, "Verily, she have no child, and her husband is old." And he said, "Call her." And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, "About this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son." And she said, "Nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid." It was almost more than she could believe. And the woman conceived and bare a son at that season that Elisha had said unto her, according to the time of life. And when the child was grown, it fell on the day that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said unto his father, "My head, my head." And he said to the lad, "Carry him to his mother." And when she came to the man of God to the hill, he caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near and thrust her away. And the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid it from me, and have not told me. And lay my staff upon the face of the child." And the mother of the child said, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." And he arose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them, and laid the staff upon the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him, and told him, saying, "The child is not awakened." And then Elisha was come into the house. Behold, the child was dead, and laid upon his bed. He went in therefore, and shut the door upon them twain, and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and lay upon the child, and put his mouth upon his mouth, and his eyes upon his eyes, and his hands upon his hands, and he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. Then he returned and walked in the house to and fro, and went up and stretched himself upon him. And the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite." So he called her, and when she was come in unto him, he said, "Take up thy son." And she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. I've read a lot of verses and know that. I hope you've got the thrust of the story. 4 different times in these verses we find the word "behold." I suppose you remember I have looked at that word "behold" a couple of times. In fact, more than that. It means "look here." "Looky, looky." It means to behold. It means "look at this." There's something interesting. There's something important. There's something you better not miss. You better watch this. You better listen. It's mentioned over 1,300 times in the Bible. It means you're about to discover something as long as you don't miss it. So it says to listen. I have mentioned several things. God sends the seed. God sees the sin. God saves the sinner. God sanctifies the speaker. God sanctifies the saint. God satisfies the servant. God subdues the stubborn. I want to look at the seed, and then you won't really understand it till the end. God supports the sorrowful. Here's a woman. I'll give you a little inkling. I hope you've got it already. This woman will be brokenhearted. But God holds her up. God sustains her. God supports her. God helps her through the situation. If you notice in verse 9, the first time we find the word "behold" says, "Behold, now I perceive this is a holy man which passeth by us continually. Here's this woman. We find a genuine concern. Here's a lady who is concerned about the preacher. Elisha and others had passed by and would come in and have a meal with them, and they would help them to rest and to refresh themselves. And she said to her husband, "Let's build a little place out behind the house, put it up against the wall, there where they can have some privacy, there where they can get along with the Lord and they can rest their body and restore their spirit. And we're going to supply everything they need to have that place of solitude and that place of restoration and that place where they can get encouraged and strengthened from the Lord." She is genuinely concerned. She says, "This is a man of God." She recognizes the Spirit. When she sees God, she knows it. Boy, I tell you, the Bible says this is a great woman. God said she is a great woman. And one of the reasons is because she recognizes the Spirit. She knows God, but she not only recognizes the Spirit, she refreshes the servant. She says, "We want to help the man of God." There's a genuine concern. She sees somebody who needs help. She sees somebody who is serving the Lord. And she wants to do whatever she can to encourage them and help them to do what they've been doing. Boy, that ought to be true of us. The first behold deals with a genuine concern. Look in verse 13. And notice where we'll find the second behold. Remember, it means looky, looky, or looky here. Look at this, look at this. Don't miss this. And he said unto him, "Say now unto her, Behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host?" And she answered, "I dwell among mine own people." Hey, this behold deals with a godly contentment. The first behold in verse 9 deals with a genuine concern. She is genuinely concerned about brothers and sisters in Christ, and she wants to do all she can to encourage them and to help them. So that ought to be true of us. But the second behold, the second looky here, looky, looky, is about a godly contentment. Elisha said to her, "Boy, you've been such a blessing to us. Boy, this place is really an oasis to us. It is such a refreshing place when we come by here. You and your husband are always a blessing. What can we do to show you you've been a blessing to us? How can we be a blessing to you?" Notice what he said. To the king and to the captain of the host. You see, Elisha has the inroads to the king. If you look in the verses before, you'll find out. And the captain of the host, in other words, the captain of the army. And he says to this woman, "Hey, all the way to the throne, if you need anything, you let me know. I have the connections." And he also has said, "If somebody's bothering you, if you've got a problem with somebody, you let me know, because I know the captain of the army will come get it settled with them. We'll make sure they don't mistreat you any longer." He says to this woman, "What can we do for you?" And here's what she said. "I have everything I need. I've got friends, and I got family. I don't know." Hey, here's what she says. "I can't think of a thing that I want. I can't think of a thing that I want to ask for." That's godly contentment. No wonder God said she was a great woman. She didn't need anything to make her happy. She's just happy anyway. She was a godly lady because she had a genuine concern and because of a godly contentment. So Elisha's saying, "Since you've said what you've done and you haven't asked for anything, we're going to make sure we're going to ask God to give you a son in your old age." And that's what happens in verse 16 and verse 17. But then we look in verse 25. I'm really heading somewhere. That's why I'm brushing through this part. There's another behold in verse 25. So she went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass when the man of God saw her afar off that he said to Gehazi, the servant, look here, behold, looky here, behold, yonder is the Shunammite. Now we're jumping ahead a little bit. But what we find here is the Shunammite woman, this great woman, is heading toward Elisha and Elisha's servant. And Elisha looks and sees her coming. And he knows her coming without her husband must mean there's something important. So Elisha sends his servant on ahead out to meet her. He can run fast. He's young. So he wants to know what she's doing there as soon as possible. If it's something urgent, if there's an emergency, he wants to know it as soon as possible. So he sends his servant out and he says, go and find out what's going on and ask her, is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? And is it well with the child? And here's what she said. Listen, here's what she says. It is well. Look back in verse 18. We'll be reminded of what happens. Verse 18. And when the child was grown, this miracle son, it fell on a day that he went out to his father, to the reapers. And he said unto his father, my head, my head. And he said to the lad, carry him to his mother. He said, take him to mama. Mama's the one that can be more likely to help them more than anybody else. You see, there's something about the mama's love. Daddies love their children, but the mamas love their children. And the daddy said to the servants, take the boy. They think that he probably had a heat stroke. And this boy that is no doubt in a serious condition, the daddy says to the servants, go and take him to his mama, carry him to his mother. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. Someone she loved. Listen to me. I'm getting closer to where I want to go. Someone she loved was dead. Someone she would die for was dead. Someone she cared about was dead. She had a generous compassion, an overwhelming compassion, an all-encompassing compassion, an overwhelming, all-inclusive compassion. The first behold dealt with her genuine concern, and the second behold dealt with her godly contentment. The third behold deals with her generous compassion. She truly cares about her son, rightfully so. She loves him. Hear me? Someone she loves is dead. Got a question? What's she going to do about it? And here's my message for this evening. There's a lot involved. There's about 15 messages in this one message. But what's on my heart heavy this evening is this. There's somebody dead, and she cares enough to do whatever it takes to make a difference. And there's people all around us who are dead, spiritually dead. They are dead in sin. And I wonder how much we're doing to see what we can do to bring them to life or to see them saved. A generous compassion. She is not going to sit back and just let her son die and do nothing about it. Most people would, but she is unique. And since she is unique and she knows someone who is unique, Elisha, she ain't going to sit back and just take it. Boy, she's going to do something about it. The first behold was genuine concern. The second, godly contentment. The third, generous compassion. Look in verse 32. We'll see the last behold is great confidence. When Elisha was come, just going to read a portion of the verse. when Elisha was coming to the house, behold, the child was dead, laid upon his bed. We jumped ahead here, and we'll have to backtrack and get back up to it. When Elisha comes, the Bible says, behold, looky, looky, looky here, he really is dead. And the emphasis is, look at this man. Discover something when you look. Realize he is dead. Realize his condition. Don't just overlook it. Don't just neglect it. Don't go on down the road and forget it. Here is a man who is dead. Most people would say, well, he's dead. But not this mama. She ain't going to be satisfied with a dead son because she knows somebody. Hey, look here. She knew Elisha. And she knew who Elisha used to hang around with. It was a man called Elijah. And she knew that Elijah, Elisha's friend, had raised a widow's son from the dead. She thought, well, if it happened to him, if it happened for them, it may just could happen for me. A great confidence. I want to tell you something. Here's a woman who had a dead son, and she had hope still. There's effort involved with this great confidence. Verse 21, she went up and laid him upon the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. She has an effort. There's effort involved. She is saying, devil, you ain't going to get my son without a fight. I am not going to give in to the fact that my son is dead. I believe there's help for him. I believe there's hope for him. And she is doing all she can to make a difference in this dead son, this dead boy, this dead man's life. There's effort. She takes the son and takes him to that prophet's chamber, lays him out on the bed, closes the door, and goes out. She's heading for help. She's putting him at the closest place she knows there is to a touch of God. She had heard Elisha pray there in that prayer chamber. She had saw the difference when he came back out after spending time with God. She had seen what that place had done for Elisha and for Elisha's servants and the other soldiers of the cross that had come there. And she thought, I'm taking him to the place where I know God is. And she spread him out on the bed and headed out. She's heading for help. There's effort involved. I just want to remind us, there's people all around us dead. Family members dead. Co-workers dead. There's neighbors dead. There's strangers at Walmart dead. There's strangers at Taco Bell dead. There's strangers at the hospital dead. And I believe this evening the Lord would say, looky here. Looky, looky. Don't just pass by them and ignore them. Don't just think it's a lost cause. Don't just give up. Don't say a lot of people go to hell. Here's what she's saying. What can I do to fix this problem? Now, she can't bring him to life, but she knows God can. And she's doing her part to get him help that she knows is real and available and possible. And hey, listen, we got to put forth some effort. We need to put forth some effort in reaching lost people all around us. It certainly starts with prayer. You that are not able to go on visitation on Tuesday night, will you assume it to be your ministry to pray for those that are able? We went last night and 350, 400 tracts with invitations to the revival were given out. And as I was handing those out, I was thinking, boy, Lord, use these. I remember how when I was under conviction, and I'd go and find every Bible tract I could and read it, and just, boy, Lord, deal with me through those tracts, and I'd sit there and cry, Lord, making me miserable in my sin. And I thought, Lord, please do that with these tracks. Let somebody read that invitation, and God, you bring them to revival and get them right or get them in. That means some effort. If you can't go out, pray for those that do. If you can go out, do it. There's some effort involved. She is doing what she can do. She can't raise them, and I can't save them, but God can, and I can do my part to get them to Him. There's effort involved. There's a great confidence. She believes if she can get him to the help he needs, there can be a difference made in his life. I want to tell you, that's confidence. That's faith. The man is dead, but she thinks there's still hope. And that person who is lost, blind, sick, oh my goodness, on the way to hell. It seems hopeless, but it isn't. There's effort involved with this great confidence. Hey, there's earnestness involved. She really did care, of course. And since she really did care, she urgently did what she did. In verse 24, it says, then she sat on an ass and said to her servant, drive and go forward. Slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee. She said, servant, who servants would a lot of times would travel with alone women for safety reasons. And she saddled the ass and said to her servant, we're heading to Elisha. And I want to tell you one thing right now. We ain't wasting any time doing it. We are on the road to Elisha as fast as this crazy donkey will take me. Don't you slow me down. Hey, if I start hollering, slow down, then and only then you slow down. But unless I say slow down, you keep going. Don't matter how fast you ride, ride to the wind. There's an urgency involved. She realizes there is no time to waste. There is no time to waste. And I believe it was probably a bumpy ride. But I don't think she complained about one bump. I don't think she even thought about it. Because she saw my son is dead and there's some hope. There's some hope to be had. But I got to get him to the hope. I got to get him to Elisha. So there's an earnestness involved. There's an urgency involved. And I want to tell you one thing. We need to realize how urgent this thing is about lost souls. Boy, when we come to church, we should have prayed all week, oh, God, bring lost people in and deal with them while they're here. Well, I want to tell you, during invitation time, we should never reach for a pocketbook. We should never reach for the jacket to head out. We should never think about, well, it's time to go to the restaurant. We ought to be praying, oh, God, deal with these people. There's an urgency about it. They're lost and heading to hell. Oh, there's an urgency about it. That person you're seeing in that elevator may be the last time they see any Christian. That Bible tract you hand out may be the last hope that person has. That person may be about to die. We don't have any idea. There's an urgency about this. There's an earnestness about this. She is on the way as fast as she can. She's not wasting a second. Neither should we. We ought to pray for lost people as though they're seconds from hell, because they may be. We ought to pray for that loved one and witness to that loved one as though it might be the last day they breathe and they're about to fall into the pit. There's an earnestness. There's an urgency. There's no time to waste. There's a great confidence. She realizes, I got to get to him, but I got to get to him in a hurry. There's an expectancy in this great confidence. She put him in the prophet's chamber because she knew God had been there. She went to Elisha because she knew that Elisha's buddy, Elijah, whereby he had received that mantle, that power, that call, Elisha probably could do something about it. She knew that Elijah had raised somebody from the dead. And if Elijah could, I believe Elisha can. There's a confidence about it. There's an expectancy. She is going expecting. She says, if I can just go get him and get him back, my boy's going to live. Well, there ought to be an expectancy in our prayer. Boy, I want to tell you, when I pray for a lost person, I pray, and I believe right then God's speaking to them. I sense it in my mind right now, wherever they're at, if God has to wake them up to deal with them, I believe that. There's a urgency and expectancy when we witness. Believe God's going to use it. You don't have to be an expert witness. Tell them what Jesus did for you. Learn how to. You got enough information around here where you ought to be able to witness to anybody alive. There's an expectancy. I'm doing God's will. Jesus died for this person. He doesn't want that person to go to hell. I'm the avenue that he's using to try and reach them. He won't make them get saved, but he can make them want to. That's what he did with me. I pray often, Lord, do in them what you did in me. If you did it in me, you can do it in them. She thought if he did it, if Elijah did it, Elisha can do it. If God did it before, he can do it again. There's an expectancy. She believes. She expects. Look in verse 22. She called into her husband, who was going back and forth because I want to pick this up, and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men, one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. And he said, where wilt thou go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath. Hey, listen. She goes to her husband. Her son's dead in the prophet's chamber. Her husband didn't know about it yet. She goes to her husband and says, send me to the man of God. And he says, well, why are you going today? It's not a new moon. It's not a Sabbath. He, in essence, says, it's not church day. Why are you going to go talk to the prophet today? And here's what she says. I'm talking about an expectancy. She is expecting God to do something. Here's what she says to her husband. She said, it shall be well. Her son is dead. And she said to her husband, it's going to be all right. Those words, it is well, actually means peace. Peace. No need to worry. No need to fret. I am going to somebody who knows God, and we're getting help for my boy. There's an expectancy. And then, as I've already said, she heads to Elisha, and Elisha sees her, and he sends the servant to find her and talk to her first and ask the questions. Look in verse 26. Here's Elisha said to the servant, run now, I pray thee, and meet her, and say unto her, is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child? Elisha says to Gehazi, go and ask her. She's coming for some reason. She didn't just drop by for a visit. Go and ask her what's wrong. Are you okay? Are your husband okay? Is the son okay? And here's what she says to the Elisha's servant. Listen to me. Here it is again. It is well. Same thing. Yeah, everything's fine. Her son is dead. And she says, yes, everything's fine. Once again, the word peace. The only reason she can do that is because she believes God's about to do something. She, in essence, is saying it's going to be all right. Well, I want to tell you, we ought to pray and believe God and trust God. We ought to pray all week and fast some and live right where God would hear us. And when we come to church, believe God is going to deal with people. Expect people to come. Got a question. When's the last time you really expected somebody to get saved on a Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night? And the Lord says, and the Lord teaches, and the Bible teaches that it is our faith that moves God. And so many times we lack faith. I know we're in the last days. Very few are getting saved, but God still saves people. God still convicts people. And if we'll pray and trust God and witness as we should and live right as we should where God will answer our prayer, we can be assured that God's going to deal with souls. And every once in a while, at least, somebody's going to get saved. That lost loved one of yours may be the one. I'm talking about expectancy. This woman, even though her son is dead, expects something good to happen. And then I think about the word emotion, verse 27. When she came to the man of God on the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to thrust her away. And the man of God said, let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her. The Lord hath hid it from me and had not told me. Emotion. The fact that she believed that God was going to do something did not erase her broken heart. I believe she wept all the way from the bed in the prophet's chamber all the way to Elisha, brokenhearted. When she got there, Elisha said, her soul is vexed. It means to be bitter. It means to be sorely grieved. She fell at his feet, a sign of humiliation. She doesn't care what anybody thinks. She wants life for her son. And as long as we can think about lost souls and not be broken, we can not witness and not care. As long as we have no emotion, no compassion, no tears for our lost loved ones and the lost family and friends and acquaintances and strangers in the world and our community as a church, our neighbors as neighbors, as long as we can look at them and know they're heading to hell, know they're lost, know they're dead, and not be broken, not be moved, not be compassionate, we're probably not going to witness much. She is broken about the condition of her son. Let me real quick wrap this up. Elisha sent the servant on ahead. Look in verse 29. And he said to Gehazi, gird up, this is Elisha speaking, gird up thy loins and take my staff in thine hand and go thy way if thou meet any man. Salute him not, and if any salute thee, answer him not again. And lay my staff upon the face of the child. The servant was younger and faster. Elisha said, go to the boy, go to the son, and lay my staff on him, and let's see if God would right there have mercy and raise him from the dead. He goes, and verse 30, as the Lord liveth, as thy soul liveth, this is what the woman said, I will not leave thee, and he arose and followed her. Elisha sent the servant ahead, and the woman said to Elisha, I tell you what, you send your servant if you want to. I'm staying with you. I know where the power is at. I know where my hope is. Listen, she's doing everything she can to find help for her lost son, her dead son. She's doing everything she can. She's believing God, but she's doing what she can do. The servant goes and lays the staff on the son, and nothing happens. Verse 34, and he went up and lay upon the child, this is Elisha, and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands, and he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. The servant went and did what he could do, but mama didn't quit. Mama didn't give up. There are some, could we call it like this, hard cases. You pray and you witness and you do all you can, and it seems like instead of getting better, they get worse. Instead of seeing a change in conviction and them getting saved and their life changing, it seems like they get worse. There are what we call hard cases, and it seems like this is one of them. But the woman still didn't give up. She said, Elisha, I'm staying with you, and let's go as fast as we can. And Elisha goes, gets in the room, just him and the son. And he stretches out across that bed on top of the son. His eyes equal his eyes. His mouth equal his mouth. His hands with his hands. I thought about this. He entered into the life of that boy. It was as though he was seeing what that boy had seen, feeling what that boy had felt, hearing what that boy had heard. He was identifying with that boy. And I'll tell you, that's what we need to do with dead people. It's easy to see the homeless and say, my goodness, what trash. I'm going to tell you something. You're looking at one of those. That's what I used to be. And Christians made fun of me. And you know what I did? I laughed at them. They are souls. They are people. We look at somebody that's not like us or don't live right or don't live clean or as though they're dirt and they are. But so are we. It was as though Elisha entered into that boy's world and identified with him. We don't know what those people went through. We don't know the trouble they had to face every day. We don't know what made them so hard, so mean, so cruel, so in love with sin. We don't know what they faced. But if we will identify with them and realize, had that been me, I would have been there too. Maybe worse. We need to enter into their world. realize where they've been raised, what they've had to go through. And except for the grace of God, that would be me still, heading to hell or already there. Elisha identified with this boy. Let me hurry. Verse 34, and he went up and lay upon the child and put his hand upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands, and he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. I believe in separation 110%. Now, I'm not talking about we need to be like the world, but I am saying we need to identify with lost people. When Elisha did that, God breathed breath into this dead boy. My last little point, enjoyment, emotion, expectancy, effort. Verse 37, and she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. I believe she's about skipping doing that. She enjoyed the fact that her son was alive. Wonder if she thought, well, I tell you what, that trip up there to Elisha sure was rough. It just wasn't worth it. All that effort, all that work. Boy, I tell you what, it just wasn't worth it. I don't think she thought that at once. I think she probably thought I would do it a million times to get my boy alive. I want to tell you something. When that person you've been praying for walks the aisle and gets saved, when you hear about them late at night getting beside their bed and calling out for mercy on from God, and they call you and say, I just want to let you know I just got saved. I want to thank you for praying for me. Thank you for witnessing to me. I used to think you were weird, but thank you now for what you did in helping me to get to God and getting alive. When you talk to that person at Walmart and they listen, and they say, oh, boy, I've been wanting somebody to tell me how to get help. And you can win them to the Lord right there at Walmart. I want to tell you one thing, it'll be worth it then. Here's a woman. Looky here. Here's a woman, listen to me, supports the sorrowful. God literally, I believe, carried this woman that was so broken over her son that figuratively she couldn't even take another step. But God helped her to do what needed. And I want to tell you something. For us to be what we need to be as far as witnesses, we're going to have help from God. It's the only way. And look at here. He says he'll give it. Well, let's stand together.